You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 181.
Hello, everybody. I am delighted to be here with you. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
I don't know why she laughs every time. She's still my wife. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
Did you know there's a new tax law that just went into effect?
One of the many changes allows you to delay your required minimum distributions from retirement accounts until you turn 72.
If that all sounded like gobbledygook to you, and you're near retirement age, you might want to set up a call with First Move by going to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers. They're happy to have a quick conversation about your retirement needs to see if they can help you.
Thank you so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. I have a great fact about the number 181. Would you like to hear
it? Do you?
I do. Okay. So the Volkswagen 181 is a two-wheel drive four-door convertible that was originally developed for the West German Army in the 60s.
Wow, that's ugly.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. But the best part of it is they brought it to the United States in the 70s, and it had the best name. The name of the car was The Thing.
The Volkswagen Thing.
The Volkswagen Thing. Volkswagen Type 181 was known in the U.S. as the Volkswagen Thing. However, this is an odd numbered show.
That means we have another person on the show besides just you and me.
We have a guest on the show. I am delighted to welcome to the show Mr. George Capenay. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having us on, or having me on today, Andrew and Anitra. It's great pleasure. And I was just thinking about that Volkswagen. I was wondering if it came out in the early 80s, maybe John Carpenter could have used it to promote his movie or something like that.
You know what? It actually looks like the kind of car you would see in a horror movie. So I would not be surprised. Apparently,
all four doors were removable and interchangeable, and the windshield folded flat.
Yeah, it looks like the ugliest Jeep you could possibly imagine.
Pretty much, it was used
by the German military during World War II.
That sounds like The Thing.
It does, kind of.
All right. Well, we wanted to have you on the show. Actually, you reached out to us to talk about coming on the Family Gamers Podcast. And, you know, we got to talking, and you have some absolutely amazing stories that I cannot wait to have you share with our listeners. However, as always, at the beginning of the Family Gamers Podcast, we talk about not cool stories, because that's called burying the lead. But we talk about some games that we've been playing.
Yes. So let's talk about what we've been playing.
All right, George, what have you been playing lately?
Well, actually, we've been playing, dare I say it, Secret Hitler. And
all right.
That actually caused a bit of a controversy in our family, particularly when we were playing it over the Christmas period with other family members, and that whole aspect of deception. And it was almost like that Survivor-esque type, are you lying? Are you not lying? You know, and all of that. And it left a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling amongst all. But it was fun to be had by everybody in learning the game and playing it and finding new things out about ourselves.
Yeah, those social deduction games get kind of weird sometimes.
That makes sense to me, though.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When is it okay to lie and when is it not? That's the conundrum.
Could you just, family gaming show, I mean, how do you teach that to your kids? It's okay to lie in this situation because it's different, you know, I don't know.
Because it's part of a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's a challenging thing.
That was it, actually. Yeah, but it was very good because it actually encouraged us afterwards to all sit down, and it was the extended family. So it was my wife's brother and his children. They're all older now. They're all adults, but still, it encouraged a really good family discussion between us about ethics and morals, and you know how they're applied in a practical sense in the way we live on a daily basis. So for that, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, that's awesome. I like to hear that. I mean, that's one of the big things that we talk about with gaming, is that it encourages that kind of family discussion dynamic. So I like it. What about you, Anitra? What's something you've been playing lately?
Well, over the last week or so, I've gotten a chance to try a couple of times Ecos, the First Continent.
Yeah, that's a great game.
Yeah, I am really enjoying how accessible and approachable this game is, because it's like a medium weight engine builder. Like, it's not an easy game by any means.
Well, it's simple enough that our 9-year-old can play.
Yeah, and he did pretty well when we taught him how to play.
Yeah, we actually, I think we played yesterday and we all ended up within like 10 points of each other.
Yeah, and the thing I definitely like the most about this game, other than it being pretty approachable, is that even though everybody is kind of trying to do their own engine building, you know, their own thing of the cards laid out in front of them and how that's going to get them points, in playing those out, everybody is working on this central continent with different land masses and water and animals and trees, and what you do affects everybody else. But in general, you're always building it up. And I really like that feeling, and it makes me have fun even when I'm losing the game horribly, which has happened once or twice.
Yeah, we played it a few times, and one of the times we played with a very analytical friend of ours who really likes to dig into the nitty-gritty. He likes deep games.
Oh, man, he destroyed us.
Well, it wasn't so much that, but I think that he felt like there was almost too much different stuff to keep track of, because there's so many cards.
Everybody's got so many cards. There is too much different stuff to keep track of.
There is a lot to keep track of. And so to some degree, as an engine builder, it almost makes sense to really just look around and focus on your engine and specifically the things that will affect the engine that you're trying to build. And not worry so much about other people, which I have mixed feelings about. So definitely some ups and downs with Ecos, but I think as a whole, it's a beautiful game that's a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of beautiful engine builders that are a lot of fun to play, we played Parks.
Yeah, so with that same friend.
Yeah, with that same friend who brought Parks. George, have you ever played the game Parks?
No, I haven't.
So this is a game from Keymaster Games, and it came out last year, and it really took the internet nerd board game community by storm.
I think that's probably fair.
And the way this game works is essentially you're traveling through the national parks in the United States, which I guess it's domestically locked, which anybody who's paying attention might have noticed that you don't sound like you're from the United States.
Yeah, but that actually raises a real point with us, because we've traveled to a lot of the national parks. It's one of our favorite things to do in the U.S., especially when we were RVing around the country when the children were really young. It was beautiful. I'm keen to hear more about it.
The way this game works is you have two hikers that can only travel forward across this path, which is kind of randomly generated. And all the stops on the path do things like give you sun or give you water or give you mountains or I think trees.
Yeah, something like that.
And all the various gear will allow you to maybe make some conversions or
get extra stuff at certain spots.
Or things like that. And what you're essentially doing is you're gathering these resources so that at the end you can spend resources to purchase, I'm air quoting, or visit certain national parks. And so those national parks get refreshed because it's a deck of cards. And then each round, as this keeps going, the path actually grows. So the things that you can do actually increases. So everybody's getting more gear.
It gets reshuffled too, so you can't plan on it being the same
right,
order.
Right. So all the different sections kind of get shuffled together and placed out randomly. So everybody's always getting more gear. There's always more cards coming out. There's always like a season effect, I think it is.
Yeah.
That will change some stuff and add some extra resources in. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's very stylized, so it's not as natural as possible, but the cards are absolutely gorgeous. The art in this game is tremendous.
And the cards really give you the feel of a quick panorama or a quick shot from each one of these national parks.
Yeah, they really do. And it's really easy to kind of lose yourself in all of the different art assets in this game, I guess. Everything looks great. So it's an engine builder, which means I got absolutely destroyed and we only played it one time. I get better at engine builders over time. Like I'm pretty good at Century now.
Yeah.
But those first few times I play an engine builder, I just get wrecked. It's pretty reliable. But that is Parks from Keymaster Games.
I love engine builders, but also I love the types of games that require cooperation, you know, to survive or to get to the end, which sort of brought to mind another game we were playing recently called Ravine. I don't know, have you guys ever played that one?
I haven't heard of that one.
I have not.
Tell me about it.
It's actually like you crash land on an island or something like that, and your plane crashes, but you have to survive the night. And you get foraging cards that help you craft food and fire and build shelters to save you against the animal attacks or the floods or the natural disasters or going mad. And basically, you actually do share forage cards with others because you can only forage a certain times because you've got like five little tokens. And if you run out of those, you either go mad or die. And basically, you have to nut it out until you get rescued, you know. So, but most times than not, if you don't cooperate in a really cooperative, collaborative manner, you all end up going crazy and dying. So it's a fun game.
Huh, it's pretty interesting. I'm actually pulling it up on Board Game Geek now.
Yeah, it's a great little game. Some friends of ours introduced us to it when we were staying with them in Long Beach last time.
Very cool.
Very neat. Well, speaking of cooperative games, there was one other game we were introduced to a week ago, which we enjoyed so much we immediately bought a copy so we could play it at home.
Yeah. I, without even getting up from the table, pulled Amazon up and purchased a copy of Wavelength.
We generally don't recommend this, but this game really caught us so quickly that we said, I don't want to forget about it. Mm-hmm. I want to get this game right now and make sure it's waiting for us when we get home.
And we had a little bit of Amazon credit. Like, it was one of those crime of opportunity kind of things.
Sure.
So, have you played Wavelength, George?
No, I haven't. How do you play that?
So it's a really interesting and fun team game. It's one of those games where one team is giving clues to their own team, and then the other team is just kind of looking on in amusement. But
there's an opportunity.
But there's an opportunity for some points on both sides. It's got this big plastic dial that you spin around, and it has a cover on it. The clue giver opens up the dial and sees where your target has landed. The dial almost looks like a speedometer or an odometer or something like that. And it's got a range on it, which is a point range. In the middle of the range is 4, to each side of it is 3, and then 2. The clue giver looks at this and then covers it back up. And then they have a little card with two opposite ends of a spectrum named on the card. So it could be something like legal to illegal or
job to career.
Or even guilty pleasure versus openly love. And the job of the clue giver is then to, using that spectrum, try to give the rest of their team a clue or a thing that fits on that spectrum so that their team will adjust the little pointer on the dial to point exactly at the bullseye without being able to see it.
So the thing that I find the most interesting about this is that you close the shield and then you spin the dial that changes where the spectrum is. The clue giver doesn't get to pick where that spectrum is.
Yes, no.
They look at the card that says illegal to legal or job to career or whatever that card is. And there's, I don't know, 100 in the game. They look at the card. They look at what the thing is that they're going to have to give a clue about. They privately look at where on the spectrum the dial is showing that they have to give a clue for. Then they've got to come up with a clue that matches that spectrum.
That will get their teammates to match that spectrum. That will get their
teammate to guess that same thing. So you can't play the game of absolutes where you push it deliberately all the way to one side and then you give some kind of obvious clue. Like, if it's illegal to illegal, like, oh, you know, murdering the president, right? You can't put it all the way to one side. It's just wherever it randomly ends up. And so you have to end up being really creative with the clues that you give, because the fuzzy logic is the hard part, right? And that's what really makes this game so intriguing to me, because it deliberately makes it more difficult for the clue giver, which just makes the conversations that happen around the table absolutely fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
I love games like that because, you know, you actually have to think out of the constructs and they're far more creative in what you have to bring to the table to encourage your team. They're types of games we love to play as a family as well.
Yeah, I think that everybody's got certain things that are their default go-to explanations for various stuff, but that stuff doesn't necessarily fit because you don't get to define where those pieces fall. So it forces people to be creative, and that's why we really like the game so much.
Sounds great.
So that was Wavelength from, I think it's actually published in the United States by Asmodee, but it's
probably
Palm Court, I think is the name of the company. Okay. Unsurprisingly, it's another game that Wolfgang Wurz worked on.
I mean, you say unsurprisingly, Wolfgang Wurz as a designer is on fire right now. I normally don't say things like that. I'm not a big name droppy kind of person, but he has created so many different kinds of games that have gotten critical recognition over the last year.
It's really
year
been
and a half.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
All right, George, anything else that you've been playing recently while we wrap this segment up?
I think that's it at the moment, yes. I mean, we travel a lot, so the old small-to-fit card games are ones that are really where everybody can get involved are the ones that they also tote with them. So, yeah, it's those ones that can fit compact and can be carried in very small luggage amounts, because a lot of the times we like to just travel with carry-on. And you have to actually measure out everything. So, yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, we are going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that very thing, that travel that you were just referring to.
Fantastic.
We'll be right back.
From an uneasy sleep and search around in the dark. How did I even end up here, you ask yourself. Trying to remember makes your head hurt, though, so you decide to look around you first. You're lying on the stone floor of a dirty cell. A dungeon?
This is a snap review for The Dungeon, part of the new adventure game series from Cosmos.
The adventure game series are cooperative games that play out, in this case, in three chapters. It was written by Phil Walker Harding and Matthew Dunstan. Up to four players can cooperate to solve the mystery and escape. Each chapter takes between an hour and an hour and a half to complete.
To begin, each player chooses a character and receives some health cards. You put your colored pawn on the room card, in this case representing the cell that you all woke up together in. On your turn, you'll move your character pawn to any location on an available room. Then take an action, like investigating a location, or combining cards. All of the actions end up being things that you're going to read out from the adventure book. So, investigating a location, you look up the number, you read it. To combine a card with another card or with a location, you simply squish the numbers together, smaller number first, and look up the combination in the adventure book. If you find the number you're looking for, then read out the text and find out what happens next. You can also exchange item cards with any other team members at any time during your turn.
Plenty of actions in this game will cost you health. This is, after all, a dangerous mission. Every time you lose a health point, flip over one of your health cards so the gray side faces up instead of the red one. If you get an opportunity to heal, you can flip your cards back over to their colored side. If you need to lose health and cannot flip any more cards to gray, you begin to permanently lose health. Return a gray card to the box. Thankfully, in reality, you have group health, so if you lose all of your health, then your teammates start to lose their health points instead, throwing themselves in harm's way to protect you from peril. What a friend.
At the end of each chapter, you'll score points for the valuable items you found, or the progress you made in getting closer to your goal. You'll also get a new goal for the next chapter. Do you want to keep going, or maybe save the game for another time? To save, you'll need to take notes of health levels and which room cards have been revealed. Then pack up all of the revealed room cards, characters, any items you're carrying around, into one zip-top baggie, and all the other cards that have not yet been revealed into another baggie. Cards that have been removed from the game you can just toss in the box. You don't need them anyway. At the end of the third chapter, you'll find out how the story of the dungeon ends, with one of five possible endings.
So let's talk about the dungeon, what we think of the dungeon, how some of these mechanics work. The first thing I'm going to say about this is that this is a non-destructive game. So this is a game that you can play with your family or with your friends, and then you can gift it to someone else because you haven't destroyed anything.
Or pack it up and play it again with a different group of friends.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels a lot like the old point-and-click adventure games, like King's Quest or something like that.
The PC adventure games, yeah.
PC. Yeah, that's exactly what this feels like, only you're doing it in tabletop form. I really like the idea of navigating through these different rooms and searching the rooms and trying to solve all of these problems.
Yeah, and much like the PC games, you can definitely play this solo. If you do, you pick two characters out of the four and just take turns back and forth between the two of them. And unlike some other cooperative games where they say, yeah, just play multiple characters, you're really not going to lose anything or lose the feel of anything by doing that.
I like the fact that this game is risky and it does have health involved, because a lot of those point and click games, you just know that eventually once you click on every single thing, you will move on to the next part of the plot and you will have everything that you could possibly have, and then you can score max points at the end. So the fact that health is involved here and there are things that you can do that actually will hurt you might give you pause when searching every single number on a card.
Yeah, you want to examine everything, but it gets risky. Sometimes you get items, sometimes you get hurt.
That's right. Form factor and style. If you think of an exit box, this looks exactly like that, only again, it's not destructible. Now, these games are rated 12+. We had our kids play through the first two chapters of the three chapters, and it was fine. They did a good job. It was helpful for us to be there. There's a considerable amount of reading in it. For them, it doesn't reward working together enough to stay coherent. There's lots of individual exploring, but they did cooperate for some of the puzzles.
Yeah, I think they enjoyed it overall. The biggest reasons why this is marked 12+ is it requires a pretty long attention span. With our kids, it definitely took about 90 minutes for each chapter. Mm-hmm. And there are a few themes that parents are going to be a little wary of. In the case of the dungeon, there are definitely themes of violence. There's a skeleton chained up in the very first room. There are things that are trying to kill you. There are also themes of drinking alcohol, which comes up a couple of times over the course of the game.
Now, in any game like this, which tries to provide an open-ish world for the players, there's a little bit of narrative incoherence. There were some cases where, for plot reasons that I won't divulge, you meet characters that probably should have known who you were, and they have no idea who you are for the purposes of playing the game. So some of that, I think, is expected, and
yeah,
you kind of hand-wave some of those things when you're playing a game like this, but if you're really somebody who requires your storytelling to be absolutely pristine and perfect, that might kind of bug you.
Yeah, we found it didn't ruin the story, but it did take us out a little bit here and there.
Now, that being said, when you and I sat down to play this game, we played the first chapter, we put it away, then we played chapters 2 and 3 back-to-back. We were so into it and what was going on, we didn't want to have to pack it up. We just wanted to keep going. So there definitely is an excellent narrative element to this game. I don't want to say that there isn't, but I did want to note what we had noticed.
And the characters you pick and the characters you use do matter. Decision points will come up that reveal different information depending on which character is doing the investigating. On top of that, we mentioned that the game is reusable, you can play it again. There are several points along the way where you will basically destroy an item or do something that can only be done once, where you have several options. So it'll drive you to want to maybe come back and try it again with a different group or try for a different ending.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the Adventure series currently has two games in it. One of them, the one we're talking about, is The Dungeon. The other one is called Monochrome Inc. The Dungeon is suitable enough to be played with kids. Monochrome Inc. probably is not. So when you look at these games, you do have to be a little bit careful about the content, make sure that it's appropriate for the audience. And in talking with the folks at Cosmos late last year, there are some lighter games coming out in the Adventure series this year.
I'm really excited for those games. We had a great time with this. It doesn't really feel like a board game. It feels like an interactive story, which was a great way to get our family working together and doing something less gamey.
All right, well then, what do you think we're going to rate Adventure Games The Dungeon from Cosmos?
Considering that it's less than $20 for up to 6 hours of fun that you can then pass on to a friend or run as an adventure for your friend group, I would give it a 4 out of 5 health points for a family audience. For teenagers and adult audience, I would definitely bump that number up.
All right. And that's Adventure Games The Dungeon.
In a snap. And we're back. So before the break, George, you began to mention that your family travels a lot. Tell us a little bit about where you got started with traveling.
For us, it was really this overwhelming desire to really learn from the people and the places and the cultures that we visited. So that's sort of what took us to the various different countries. And to get back to your question there, Anitra, about what it was that took us in that direction, it was essentially all of us coming to this realization about 10 years ago And our children were quite young then. They were still only 8 years old. But even then, we were feeling like our lives were going in separate directions. And it was sort of a like this critical turning point in our lives where we thought, well, we can keep going in the direction that we're going. And we could see potentially what was going to happen, that we were going to be in totally different directions in a few years' time. And for my wife and I, especially my wife, who had this real inner feeling, you know, that something's just, it's just not working for us, where the things that the children were experiencing in school, some really disturbing things, even when they were only in the first grade. And she came home and said, one of the girls told me I shouldn't play with Sindhu because of the color of her skin. And, we were just dumbfounded that, you know, at this age, these sorts of things were happening in school. And sure, my wife discovered there was this thing called homeschooling, but it was the deeper, more intrinsic questions that were coming to us that really motivated us to see, hey, there could be another potential life that we could have as the parents of our children that we could experience together in a deeper and a much more engaging and uplifting way. And yeah, that's when we decided that we would take our children out of school. And right at that time, it was an intersecting time in the tech industry where 2008 had just sort of hit. And what does a big technology company do? Just at that moment when we decided we'd take the children out of school, they decided to let go 7 or 10% of the workforce just arbitrarily. And there we go. I was made what we call here in Australia redundant, but what they say in the States was let go. And that gave us the opportunity and space to breathe. And what did we really love doing? The things that brought us together, my wife and I, when we were younger, was travel. And, you know, while all of our compatriots and people that were same age as us were doing when they got married was they were saving hard to get this mortgage. Well, what we did was we got married and we were saving hard so that we could basically travel the world for a year. And that's what we did. After our first year of marriage, we went and we traveled the world for a year. So that was a really strong thing. So that when we reached this point where we were, you know, with the children thinking, what will we do? The answer was pretty strongly pulling in that area. We had sold our house. We had sold all of these unnecessary things. We'd cleared so much stuff out of our lives. And then really, we looked at it and said, there's nothing really holding us here in Australia. Why don't we go out there and do what's calling to us? And that was this really, really strong call to adventure, to learning, and to creating this journey together where we could learn together. And at the time, we created a little project that we would take on the road that was intended to bring people together with their needs and their wants. And we created a little website where you could put in what you needed and maybe what you could offer, and it would match people up. And we called this energetic exchange. And that was the catalyst that sort of launched us on this journey where we're now in the 9th consecutive year of traveling around the world.
Very cool.
That is really, really amazing. And bravo for having the self-awareness and the desire and the fortitude to make decisions like that, to take your kids and to do those things. And we kind of talked briefly about homeschooling earlier, and just to be able to really pursue just a different lifestyle than what, especially in the States, we fall into the standard method of raising children, I guess, where one or two parents goes to a job and tough it out until they can go to school. And then it's a little bit easier, but all those things. But I mean, that's just awesome.
Thanks, Andrew. But you know, the truth was, this could have gone a totally different way. We could have actually said, well, no, let's just keep doing this because it's comfortable, we know it. And it was really taking that moment to breathe and really listen into that inner voice. You know, they used to call it, you know, women's intuition or that gut feel. And it was really my wife who was our leader in that respect, and opening us up to the possibilities that if we really did listen to those things, there were other alternatives. Because it's not just in the States that this is happening, you know, it's in places, all developed countries are really experiencing this, Australia, the UK, all of Europe, they're all experiencing this same sort of drive to keep doing things. Even then, sometimes when we really feel in our own bodies, in our own feelings, that something's just not right. And it's hard to take that first step when you're on a path and you know that you're confident in that path. So, yeah, that was that sort of intuitive feeling that we were getting. And what I'm trying to say is I think that when we're listening to that and we follow through, what we've learned over the last 10 years is there isn't a wrong step that you can take.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, a lot of what you've talked about is really essentially, I guess, emotional intelligence and really being honest with oneself and really looking at that inner voice and separating, I guess, from the noise of the world and really taking stock of kind of what your life is about and what you really want to be doing with that. And you've actually turned this into something. It's gone beyond what you've done with your family, which is incredible. And it's turned into essentially, I mean, I'm going to call it a business, even though I'm sure you didn't do it strictly for the business part of it, but it's become something with At Home in the World retreats. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is a business, but it's also, this is the beautiful part that we really feel drawn to it. It is also what we feel is our calling as well. So like calling sounds religious. It's not really like a religious thing. It's actually, you know, like the thing that really excites us and gives meaning and to the types of things that we do. And it excites us to sort of get up together as a family every day and do this. And yes, that was, we founded this idea of At Home in the World Family Retreats. And this was not just for traveling families or homeschooling families, but what we were noticing really, Andrew and Anitra, was that families in the developed world, especially families in the States as well, were under so much pressure on a daily basis, you know, with all of the things, the cost of living, having that great career, owning that house, living in that neighborhood, having the children and going to the right schools and the right after school activities and all of these pressures and all of these things that families are facing on this daily basis, we were starting to see as the things that were drawing them in very different directions, almost separate directions, where they weren't really finding that space, those moments to really deepen these family connections. And for us, what we learned over the course of these travels and living in these countries and really learning from the cultures and the people and the communities and the way these communities were forming in some of these countries that we were living was that essentially that families were looking for a way in this really pressure cookery type of world that we live in to be able to find ways, meaningful, simple, easy ways in which they could connect, in which they could find that inner voice and in actual fact develop that into their own family story, which would combine everybody's strand and everybody's interests and weave them together in a strength and a way in which one family story can be lived and brought to fruition through the energies and efforts of all the families. And how this could be lived in an easy way in our day-to-day lives in the societies that we're living. So this is not necessarily for families who want to travel, but for families who want to deepen their family connection in a way in which it can be done on a thriving daily basis in their existing lives. So that's what sort of motivated us to form this business, which is At Home in the World Family Retreats.
So that's really interesting. And I'm totally fascinated by it because when I think retreat, I think it's just I'm going away to a place or Anitra's going away to a place and I'm having a retreat or she's having a retreat. And this whole idea, the whole process, the whole concept is about the family remaining as a single unit, but also doing that same thing, that retreat idea, but as a family, not as individuals.
Yes, that's a really good description of it. And in actual fact, over the course of our learning as a family, what we did was we integrated there is a learning program, but there's also some wonderful excursions and cultural immersive activities that we have over the course of the 2 weeks. But what we have done very consciously is planned an integrated adults and children learning program. And this is divided into two parts. So in the morning, where we do this separately, the adults separate and the children separate. But at the end, in the afternoon session, we actually bring this together where the family all learns together. And often this is done with the children leading the learning sessions. So the children are actually leading us and being our teachers and our mentors. And this is all along the idea that we also advocate, and that is raising free and fully empowered individuals, our children, to actually take a full stakeholder role in this family experience, to feel like they are fully valued as contributors, and to develop this in a way in which we can all benefit from this mutual contribution of value that we bring to the table. And that's why we say it does satisfy everybody's needs and also creates a family story, utilizing all of the strengths that we possess as a family.
I actually really love that idea, because so many people will say tongue in cheek that their kids are kind of this, in some ways, like burden that they have to bear, you know, we've got to get through the young years and then everything will be a lot easier or whatever it is. And that's something that we really try to do, is find ways that our kids can contribute. And it may or may not contribute it in the same way that obviously the adults in the family can, but making sure that they feel like they're having an impact on the family dynamic is really hugely important. And obviously one of the ways that we do that is by playing games with them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And, yes. You know, and we've talked about this, I think, with lots of people that we've interviewed, but one of the most amazing things about board games is that when you all sit around the table to play a game, I mean, yes, you have titles, right? You have, oh, that's dad, that's mom, that's, you know, brother, sister, whatever, but everyone's equal in the context of the game. And yes, everybody's contributing to the game in the same way. And everybody's taking away from the game in the same way. And translating that into a real life experience where everybody is contributing to the family dynamic and everybody is taking something away from the family dynamic in ways that, while there may be positional authority and things like that, they're still equally valid, I think is really powerful. Mm.
Yes, I'm glad you raised that, Andrew. That's such a really important point. And gaming is such a great way to remove those perceived barriers. And what we've learned over the course of this whole experience that we've traveled over these last 10 years is that the faster that we can remove these barriers of, yes, sure, mum and dad are there as guides, as mentors, but a lot of the times we've mistaken that to be positions of authority. And it's really hard for someone to have that feeling of a full stakeholder and a free-thinking individual who can contribute fully when there is this hierarchy of power and where my rule or dominance over you will make you feel lesser empowered. And therefore, we're actually suppressing these wonderful interactions that can happen. And through gaming, you have that where the board is clear and everybody has an equal stake in that role. And children feel really empowered to play in a manner. And what are we always saying as adults as well? We're always saying as adults that we're losing our playfulness. And that's a really key aspect of some of the things that we integrate into our retreats as well, is this openness to a playful manner in which we can learn. And playing games is just such an empowering way for us to remove this dynamic of authority and to integrate a more free-thinking, open way in which children can really take that full stakeholder role in the daily family activities.
Wow.
I like it. I think I probably couldn't agree with more with almost everything you said. So I'm on board. But we're talking about games now, which is, of course, what we talk about on the show.
What we're here for.
And so, like, let's bring this all together. So all of this travel experience that you've had, all of this experience with At Home in the World retreats, all of this stuff has come together in a game. And I want to talk about that a little bit. This is a game called The Intuition Game. Talk about The Intuition Game.
Yeah, thanks. That's another beautiful segue there, Andrew. You've done spectacular today. yes, indeed. And if we look at that and we're looking at some of the things, you know, in recent history that we've been looking at, what's one of the biggest, most successful movie franchises out there? Well, you've got the Marvel superheroes and this epic story, and they're weaving in all of the stories of these people have a superpower. And there's this real longing in society. We feel like we want to have superpowers. We want to be the people that are saving others and not the people that need saving. And effectively, that's something that we were looking at from the very beginning of our journey, that we spoke about that intuition, that gut feel, that directional finder. And that's one of the things that we actually used over the course of our journeys with our children to create this game that you're talking about. Because in actual fact, our intuition is a hidden superpower. It's sort of like, how do we tap that superhero inside us, you know? Well, that's one of the things that we looked at, because every time we were traveling and we were on the road and we were at a crossroads, and that was a lot of times, we were looking at, okay, what's the next step? Where do we go? And these are valid questions that families ask on a daily basis. And a lot of the times, actually, they're probably not asking them because they feel trapped. They feel in a rut, or in a way in which they can't seem to see a different way. And this intuition thing was something that we were using to say, hey, what happens if we go left or right? And we thought, how could we actually put this together in a way in which we could use this superpower to play it as a game? And that's how this evolved over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. Well, actually, stuff we were doing for the last 10 years, but it started evolving into a game process, which we looked at how we could ask questions of real meaning and direction and use those in a way in which we could bring our family and our friends together to explore the answers, or possibly get directions to those questions that would give us a clear-cut direction in how or the way we needed to go. And as we developed this, you know, you write down questions that are of meaning to you, and we basically put them down on a little piece of paper, and then somebody gets to sit in the intuitor seat and actually intuit somebody else's question. And out of this came the most uncanny, head-turning experiences of people going, man, the answers to those questions that I was getting, I can't believe it. That was what I was thinking. That was what I was feeling. And this was a way in which we could actually get our children excited about playing something that was often, when people look at, okay, so what should we do as a family, that is looked upon as a chore. And this way, in creating this game, we were able to ask questions of meaning and direction and play it together in a group that would get them really anticipating what are the answers, and look at the faces on the people as they see their questions are answered, and really see how this superpower works in action and practicality in our daily lives.
That sounds pretty interesting. Could you give us an example of maybe an experience within the context of the game that was really remarkable for you or for someone that you watched play?
Yeah, actually, I can give multiple examples, but the one I would give would be generally is that, as I said, what we do is, in playing the game, you sit down, you write down questions that are meaning to you of direction. Let's say, for example, should I enroll in this course now, learning course or something that's going to take me in this direction? There have to be yes, no answers to make it effective. And everybody writes down 3 questions of meaning to them. And then what happens is those questions are turned over and one person is sat in a seat and they turn away from everybody else. And then what happens is the group pick one question that they're going to think collectively about. And they hold that thought in their mind, and then they say to the person sitting in the intuitor's seat, okay, we're thinking about that question. And then the intuitor has to say what comes to mind. And it's the first thing, without being judgmental or without actually analyzing or whatever. And it can be anything from a vision to a taste or a feeling in the body. It can be like, oh, my foot's tingling, or I actually see this beach and it's long, it seems so long, and I find that I'm never getting to the end of it. But anyway, then all of that stuff is written down on a separate part in the paper where the question is written underneath that, and it's written who's intuiting and whose question it is. And at the end of that, there's a little intuition card that the intuitor draws once they actually finish intuiting. And that's placed face down on top of the question sheet. And then everybody gets 3 turns to intuit, and it goes all the way around till it's at the end. And at the end of the game, what we do is we turn over and we have a look at the answer. So here's where it gets really mind-bending. And it's someone like, I've asked a question like, should I visit Hawaii this year instead of going somewhere else? And it's exactly the person, another person is sitting in the seat and they say, I see this beach and it's filled with these sands and these big waves and I'm really feeling this great feeling in my body and the sun shining on me. So those are the kinds of answers that we're getting. And in our intuition game cards that you flip over at the end are little inspirational affirmations. And the uncanny nature in which they correlate with the answer is like one of the cards might be something like you'll only find out if you actually go, you know. So that's the kind of correlation that we get. And it actually shows a lot of the time how other people are intuiting other people's questions and getting really uncannily meaningful answers for the people who've asked the questions. So that's the mind-blowing thing, that this superpower actually works and everybody's got it. And played in this game, you can actually have a fun time with your friends and family actually asking these questions and getting some meaningful answers.
Well, that's pretty wild. I can only imagine what that must be like.
Yeah, it blows some people's minds, actually. The ones that blows the most are the skeptical people. You know, people like, oh, this intuition thing, you know, that's, you know, that's a little out there for me, little, who, you know, like new agey or something like that. But actually, when they get their questions answered and somebody else is intuiting it, you can see their eyes opening and wide and going, oh, my goodness, how did that happen? And there's actually a little bit of science behind this as well, if you really have a look at the way we project information, because, you know, our hearts are transceivers, meaning that they send and receive electromagnetic impulses, and not so different to the same types of signals that we receive through the television set. If you think about it, we can broadcast and receive in the same way, let's say, a television broadcasting studio is sending and receiving. And because of the ionosphere and the way things are carried electromagnetically through our planet, it's not that uncanny when you look at some of the scientific aspects of it.
That is fascinating. I would really be interested in reading more about that or studying that a little bit more. That's some pretty crazy stuff.
That's wild.
Yeah, it really is. So we've talked about this as a game, obviously, but what's happening with the intuition game with regards to maybe making this something that's available at retail or whatever that might look like?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that, because we actually have been testing this for the last couple of years. It's one of the solid foundations of our retreats as well, because it's one of the first aspects we play. We get families to ask those questions that are really important to them in direction, and we utilize that to help them create their craft, their own family story. So we've actually used it, and there's been some other practitioners out there that have tested it and given us some really great feedback. And we're at the point now where we are thinking about doing a little bit of a crowdfunding thing to get it up and running and releasing it on a bigger scale. We've got a little site called theintuitiongame.com, but you can't still purchase it. But if people are interested, they can definitely contact us and we can get copies to them. But we'd happily have some people, if they're interested in it, we'd love to hear their feedback as well, you know, as to what they experienced with it. And we're working toward possibly to the latter part of this year having an official launch for it as we launch another business venture that we're going ahead with later in the year.
That's really cool. And I think it's definitely something that we'll have to keep our eyes out for. And certainly if any of our listeners are curious about it, they should certainly let us know or reach out to you at theintuitiongame.com to get a little bit more information.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're open to it from any angles and any questions. There's no silly questions at all.
Is this something that you might be thinking about making available in a print and play kind of thing that might get people maybe a little taste of what the game is like?
Yeah, actually, I think we might be open to that. And yeah, we do actually have a finished product in terms of the prototype and everything that comes with, you know, nice and neatly packaged. It's just that we haven't ramped up on production of that. But if people would be interested in that, we'd definitely be interested in hearing back from them. And if they want to have a version of that, I'm sure we'd be happy to have a brief conversation. And then, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. If you'd like a print and play copy of the Intuition Game, you need to make it happen by going to theintuitiongame.com and contacting George and his family.
Absolutely. And if just to mention, if there are any families who are also interested in our retreats, we are actually running one in June 1st to 14th in Oregon. So, you know, this way families that don't want to travel outside of the US, we have a limited amount of places that if they would like to come along, that's something that they can have a look at also at homeintheworldretreat.com. That's a wonderful retreat we're going to be running in the Jacksonville, Oregon area. And we're going to be doing some wonderful, wonderful excursions around there, as well as the whole program that I shared with you before.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, this sounds like probably a good time to, I think, wrap up the show. So you mentioned at home in the world retreat.com. Where else can people find you online, George?
They can find us basically at the Intuition Game and at home in the world retreat.com. And also we are, I suppose, on Facebook, L-A-L-I, George Capenay, our name. So Lolly George Capenay, that's where we're at. But mainly through our retreat site is where people can connect up with us. And we're happy to speak to anybody, you know, who's interested in either our travels or if they're interested in anything to do with deepening their family connections, we're happy to have a chat.
Awesome. And we will have all of that stuff in the show notes for the show in case you weren't able to pick it up if you're driving or whatever. So let's see. Anitra, where can people find us online?
Well, as always, you can find us on social media, mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Family Gamers AA.
You can find our Facebook community. The easiest way of finding that is to go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into Facebook. Obviously, you can find all of our news and reviews and podcasts and everything at thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. We're also on TuneIn and Spotify and just about anywhere most podcasts are found.
Any smart home device, say, play the Family Gamers podcast and it'll probably show up.
Yeah, it should. And don't forget, the Family Gamers is generously sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/Family Gamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, I think that's going to be it for us this week.
Okay, everybody. Until next week, play games with your kids.